Did you know the Latinx student population is the furthest behind in our education system? The Latino phenomena is that Latinos are the highest minority group and continue to be the farthest behind for our country. Some of the listeners might think the illegal crossings are the culprit, but I've got news for you. The Latino numerical increases are more a result from colonization since the late 1400s, early 1500s, US wars of conquest in Florida, Mexico, and Puerto Rico, and internal policies due to agricultural work exceptions, to name a few. I can speak as an American Cuban whose parents migrated to Florida from Cuba because of the revolution in the late 50s. As a first generation US born, I remember being in high school living in Miami in the 1980s and seeing the city grow exponentially overnight by the dozens, 135,000 to be exact, with people called Marielitos. Who were they? Well, they were named for leaving from the Port Mariel in Cuba, people swimming on rafts, coming, escaping Cuba. In addition, refugees from Central America have been coming here since the 60s. Check us out on domasgroup.com, domasgroup.com. We will post this podcast there for your viewing. To hone us in today, listeners, to center us, there's an acceptance that Hispanics, Latinx are critically important and an integral part of the tapestry in American public school education. Today's episode is a compelling one. How can we become a country where its workforce is skilled and thriving? How can we spur inclusive growth for all? Welcome to another episode of Educa K-16, where we place students at the core of our call to action. We have made a quantum leap and are now in the fourth industrial revolution. Breaking it down for our listeners, what does that mean? The fourth industrial revolution is a new era of technologies such as artificial intelligence. For our new listeners, let's welcome back Dr. Abdin Novoa Rios, author of The Story. Let me see if you can see this. Can we see this here? The Story of Latinos and Education in American History, and the second book recently out, Critical Issues of Latinos and Education in the 21st Century, Where Are We? Our distinguished guest is a native of Puerto Rico. He grew up in the barrios, fighting gangs in the streets of Chicago for survival. Yes, believe it or not, yes, he did. He fought gangs in the street, or someone else fought them for him. I think it was his uncle. So here he is. He was placed 1 year behind in fourth grade and he has 6 degrees. He thrives because of his educational achievements. Welcome, Dr. Novoa Rios, and welcome to all our listeners in the North, East, West, and South of the United States of America. Welcome, Dr. Novoa Rios.
Thank you.
Dr. Abdin Novoa Rios, given the fact that the future of America depends on the education of our Latinx students, please explain your concept that we were talking about, we left off in episode 2 so that our new listeners can, you know, grab the gist of what we're talking about. Explain your concept of an educational renaissance to our listeners. How can we awaken into a fresh education system, a renaissance in public education?
In brief, what I was talking about was the fact that we need to redo education. Education needs to be reawakened in this country. It needs to be done differently. If we do what has been done in the past, we're going to get the results of the past. And we have to cross that chasm. It has not worked for all students, certainly not for certain racial minorities, and for good reason. And we explained some of that during the last interview. So what I call the movement on education has to be very different, and I'm calling it a renaissance, not another reform. We have had too many of those reforms and they really have not made a major difference. And most reforms have been small, have been localized. We're talking about revamping, redoing the entire educational system in this country.
And Renaissance has a refresh tone to it. It's not, you know, reform seems so negative. It means like, yes, we have to overhaul, but a Renaissance is inclusive. It's holistic, right? So can you speak a little bit about that?
It's comprehensive. It's not piecemeal. It's even better than hitting refresh on your computer. it's totally a revamping and a rethinking and a re-engineering of our educational system.
Excellent.
And that's not so easy to do as it is to say, but if we're going to change this trajectory, which has been in a downward spiral for now almost 30 years, we need to do it differently. And if we're going to be competitive in this world, we need to do it differently, because we are losing, as we mentioned during the last interview, our place in the international market by whatever test we use. And we now have 4 international tests, and the United States is not doing well.
Can you name one for our audience, like, that you're measuring this globalization, we're measuring this competence with other nations? Can you name one of the tests or a couple of them so that our audience is aware?
One is known as the PISA test. The other one is known as the TIMSS test, which is Trends in Math and Science, TIMSS. The PISA is another international test that's done with OECD countries, the industrialized countries. And the comparisons are very, very well made. These tests have been in existence for several decades. And so they're done every 3 to 6 years, depending on which test we're talking about. So they are very robust. And in fact, they're a little bit better than even our SAT.
Interesting. So, but, yeah, I mean,
but they're calibrated for high school students, not to miss.
So in this Renaissance that we're talking about, that you're referring to, we will also need to look at those assessments that we measure students with, because like you're saying, these are better than SATs. So we might need to take a peek at our standardized testing to be more inclusive. Yeah, that's a whole other conversation, right?
It is another conversation.
Okay, I won't go there yet. But
to say that the SAT and the ACT are taking some examples that are occurring on these other international tests and incorporating them in new versions of the US ACT and SAT.
So bringing it back to our initial thought of, here we are, we're in this globalized, you know, world. We are not competing very well. We need to do an overhaul, a revamping, have a renaissance in our public school system, be inclusive. I go back to 15, 18 years ago when I was in the classroom. I remember preparing my 5th graders at Oyster Bilingual School before they even had a middle school, celebrating their diversity and inculcating curiosity, praying that my 5th graders would not be dropouts in 8th grade or that they would get to high school. What is the dropout data today for 8th through 10th graders? Can you enlighten us with that a little bit?
For
Latinx, yeah.
The dropout has been significant. And in fact, that's what first brought some organizations like ASPIRA, at that time called ASPIRA Inc. of America, today it's called the ASPIRA Association, to the fore to make a difference in terms of the dropout situation among Puerto Ricans, specifically as they were coming into the US in the 50s and later 60s. What has happened is good news in that the dropout pattern has gotten better. The dropout percentages have lessened over time. And they continue to. If we look at the trend line of the last 20 years, roughly 25 years, that trend line has dramatically decreased more than any other group. The downside of that is that it is still higher rates than any other ethnic, racial, or demographic group in this country. Though the differences are minuscule, it is still the worst of all in elementary and secondary education.
So what you're saying is that compared to 20 years ago, our Latino students in the public school system are moving from middle school to high school and graduating. That was not happening 15, 20 years ago. They were dropping out between 8th and 10th grade. That was the trend, that was the pattern. Now we have achieved for some high school graduation. Most of them graduate.
And that's the good news.
That is the good news.
That's dramatic for the Latino population. Now, when we resolve one problem or one set of conditions, we sometimes then graduate to other sets of conditions. What ironically is occurring now is that we continue to have a dropout problem, but now it has morphed into the college scene. And now the highest dropout percentage in America is the Latino between first and second year college.
Okay, and so wait, so we're in this future now. Now we're in the future. We're here. This is the future that we thought about. We're in quantum leap time. So you're saying our dropout rate in high school has improved considerably for our Latinx students, but what's going on with college rates? I mean, they're dropping out freshman, sophomore year. They're not continuing. What about from high school? Are they going to vocational schools or professional certifications? Are we promoting that in higher ed? Let's talk about that.
Okay, let me respond in a couple of ways on that. If we take the path of higher education, which means going to college, as one path, we need to compare that with a second path, which is that of professionalism, which does not require higher education. IT is a very good example of that. Certain vocational patterns, trends, professions also are of that nature, where an apprenticeship is the equivalent or can be the equivalent to going into higher education. And the third trend is that a high school diploma becomes a stopgap and you don't go anywhere. The good news for the Latino is that we're finding that more and more Latinos are going back to school after that stopgap in terms of that third group. And so they're going to school after age mid 30s to 40s. And that's good news. So that continuing education is very, very resonant and very real for the Latino. Also, GED is very real for the Latino in those streams. But let me go back.
So before you go back, I just want to welcome our listeners that are just tuning in with us. We are talking about the Latino phenomena, that Latinos are the highest minority group, but they continue to be the farthest behind in our country in education. And we're here with Dr. Adigno Barrios. We are talking about the dropout now, no longer high school dropout crisis, but now it's at the freshman and sophomore year at the college level. So going back, Dr. Novoa.
In higher education, we have good news and maybe not so good news. The good news is that we have a much higher percentage entering higher education than ever before. In fact, it is so high that the last several years, it is at par, if not even higher, than the white Caucasian population entering the university system. Now, the not so good news is that it also conveys or has been conveying a higher dropout rate for a variety of reasons, and not all academic, by the way. Poverty has a lot to do with this, where a student will drop out for 1 or 2 years and likely go back. But we don't always track that very well. But the point is that they're not continuing in higher education as others are proportionally. Now, the other situation that is occurring is that the Latino population, for the most part in higher education, is highly concentrated in very few universities. The other aspect of that is that a large proportion are going to two-year colleges as opposed to four-year universities. And so you sometimes have a bit of a gap of continuance between two-year and four-year institutions in terms of that continuance or that transfer rate. So if you put all of these factors together, you begin to understand the context of higher education for the Latino, which is a unique phenomenon. And in fact, I devote an entire chapter of my second book on that.
Yeah, so what I'm listening to you say is that there are a lot of cracks in our system, but as you talk about these cracks with, you know, the concentration of Latinos in a few universities, with attending two-year colleges and not heading to the second, finishing the last 2 years in a university, those cracks, I see light also, because those cracks shine the light on what the problems are, right? So I see possibilities. I see a lot of possibilities. Let's talk about that vocational trajectory and professional certification, because we need Latinos in leadership. We need Latino representation in government. We need Latino representation in corporations. I mean, how is that going in the country?
The bottom line of all of this is that it is important for us to understand that higher education is not for everybody. And that has been a major misunderstanding in this country. And for the Latino, there are other avenues beyond, in addition to higher education. So it should not be a stopgap. The fact that we're not going to college is not the end of the educational experience. More so now that we are in the 21st century. And so there are more avenues now than ever before. And in fact, the future of higher education may drastically change the next generation. And we should be very aware of that. The long distance learning has changed dramatically in this country, and it's going to continue to change even subsequent to the pandemic. But that's a new shift. And the fact that we don't all have to have a bachelor's degree to enter the workforce at very high levels is another major change that is occurring. And by the way, that's not unique to the United States, that's worldwide.
Right.
So the concept of higher education, which comes back from the medieval years, from basically the 12th century, is changing now this century to let our population know very well what these alternative avenues are. So that IT, as I mentioned at the beginning, is one where you can literally get a lot of your education by the internet and through certification without ever having taken even one course in higher education, and do extremely well, because right, as we know, IT pays very, very well.
And yeah, and the need right now, we were talking about this new education revolution is all about technology and artificial intelligence. So IT is definitely the place to be. And we can discuss that a little later, but I wanna go into, and yeah, I agree with you, like our imagination is our birthright, and thinking for ourselves, you know, critical thinking, you've mentioned this before, is really the most fundamental skill that we can possess as humans. So revamping and looking at this with a whole new perspective, with a Renaissance holistic view, is definitely needed. So what seems to be a systemic and intractable educational system, there's hope. There's really hope. Healing our educational system and viewing it as collective trauma, right? I mean, we've gone through collective trauma. So now we have to have deep social, historical, cultural, and multi-generational healing, right? To do this. Yeah. Let me look at this quote. I want to read this quote from your book from Rosita López. She writes, in a much needed and long-awaited book, Dr. Novoa Rios has interwoven the most comprehensive tapestry of the Latino American quest to navigate success in American society. A historical gem, she writes, certain to become the standard work in its field for many years to come. Rosita López, for our audience, she is Professor Emerita in Educational Leadership. Dr. Rosita López is from Northern Illinois University. And here today, I'm inviting you, Dr. Novoa, to co-host with me our next episode. Let's invite her to come in and to chat with our audience. And as a matter of fact, that's what I want to do moving forward, is Educa K-16 wants to invite the 100 to 112 of the most prominent Latino leaders in education that you have interviewed for your books, and invite them here to the podcast so we can discuss this renaissance that you're talking about.
And let me add to that, that a lot of what I'm saying in my book is coming from these 112 educational leaders who are leaders not only in one sector of education, but in multiple sectors of education. So we look at higher education. Several presidents of universities were interviewed. If we look at education K-12, several superintendents and principals were interviewed, as well as teachers. If we look at the research area, a number of major researchers were also interviewed. If we look at education from the community sector, a number of community leaders in education were also interviewed, and so forth. So that what we call education with the capital E goes much beyond K-16, and we need to understand that panoply. Right. And so by bringing these people in, we get a vast array of what is available in education.
Yes,
and
so absolutely.
It's a delight to bring them and to basically introduce them
and expand the conversation.
We're very limited when we talk about education.
Yeah, we can expand the narrative right here. So today's episode, as you heard, was a compelling episode. As a country, we need a renaissance in public school education, according to Dr. Abdin Novoa Rios. How can we become a country where its workforce is skilled and thriving, not just surviving? How can we spur inclusive growth for all? Check us out. Check us out at domasgroup.com. Also, if you're interested in Dr. Noboa's books, please go to abdinnoboa.com, abdinnoboa.com, and purchase his book before our next episode so you can be, you know, with it and you can be reading and following along. If you enjoyed our jingles today, quick shout out to our music producer and award winner, Dave Kemp. Check him out on Instagram, capital D, capital T, capital O, DTO Music. Follow him, please. Thank you, Dr. Abdin Novoa Rios. It's a pleasure.
Once again, thank you.
Thank you.